Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners. Today, I am joined by our director of business development, Caitlin Kerrigan. Hello, Caitlin.
Hello, Jodi. I'm very excited to be here today.
Oh, we have so much to talk about. We are in full swing at Base Beauty in award season, but not the award season we talk about with our clients. The agency award season, although, is there really a season for this? Doesn't it just kind of feel like
it's always on? Rolling calendar. So, but very exciting still. We have a lot to talk about with it.
Right. So we just found out, we're still glowing, that we are finalists in two award programs, the DigiDay Content Marketing Awards and the US Agency Awards.
Yeah. So DigiDay Content Marketing Awards, this is really exciting because it's with our work that we did with Kaoli, which was a year of Kaoli events where we still talk about this today, earning over 100 million plus an EMV, which it still blows my mind when I talk to brands about that. So I'm really happy that we're able to get recognized for it through this award. And then the US Agency Award, this is really exciting because it's in the category of Best Small Agency of the Year. Jodi, maybe you can talk a little bit about the work that we put forward for this one.
Yeah, this is a really fun one to submit because it wasn't just about one client and one client's impact. It's really about the impact that team makes for our entire portfolio. So this work focused on Kaoli, Leak Labs, and Clairol. So for Clairol, we've worked with them for many years on an integrated social media program. And the work that was submitted was for our heritage campaign, not heritage, but heritage, where we leverage consumer insights from our social media work to build a totally new ownable platform for the brand. Yeah. And then for Leak Labs, we helped the Lipstick Lesbians launch their new brand. We developed all their campaign and content assets for the launch. As we know, they made a lot of noise at the launch. Our work was featured all over the place. And then, of course, for Kaoli, like you just mentioned, all of that work to build awareness across earned media and influencer. So very, very proud of these. And we're submitting more. I have many more on my list, Caitlin, that we have to talk about.
Yeah. So everyone should stay tuned because you know that we're going to be announcing it on LinkedIn when we find out more come August.
So let's switch gears and talk about our show today.
Yeah. So Jodi, who do we have on the show for today?
This was really fun. This was a sit down with Sheila Wong. She's the COO and CMO of Sincerely Yours. And Arpan Ray, he's a partner at Coefficient Capital. And they're here to talk about what it takes to really launch a culture-driven beauty brand in today's market.
Yeah, this was so fun because we got such a behind-the-scenes story of Sincerely Yours. So I'm sure so many of our listeners have heard about the massive launch that drew, what was it, over 80,000 people, and then why Sephora really was the right retail partner for them from day one.
Yeah, so Sheila shares her unconventional career journey from building brands through consulting, investment banking, and now leading one of beauty's most talked about teen skincare companies. This is a very interesting company. It's co-founded by a 15-year-old YouTube star, Salish Matter, and her father, who's a photographer, Jordan. And they launched this in September 2025. And the brand focuses on gentle products for young skin. Arpan is so interesting to hear from. He takes us on the investor's perspective, right? The inside investor path, explaining what catches his eye when evaluating founders, why community has become one of the biggest competitive advantages in consumer brands, and why disciplined growth matters more than chasing hype.
Yeah. And we get to hear about how managing a brand that's powered by an incredibly passionate online community, while also, you know, balancing that authenticity with rapid growth. Also talk about how AI is changing the way that they work, which, you know, is a hot topic that we know that we talk about every day, and really the lessons that both of the guests have learned from founders throughout their careers.
So whether you're building a brand, investing in the next big idea, or just curious about how culture and commerce come together, this episode is packed with insights you won't want to miss.
All right. So let's get into it. Here's episode 311 with Sheila Wong and Arpan Ray.
I want to take a pause and thank CEW, who is our partner in this series. CEW is where beauty comes together. And I am sitting with Lisa Campione. She's the director of events at CEW, and we have a message for you.
As the beauty, health, and wellness industry's largest member community, CEW connects more than 6,000 leaders across brands, retailers, suppliers, technology, and media.
I've been a member for, I want to say 15 years, although it's 16 or 17, and I think I can see how long I've been a member on the site, right, if I go back to my page, so I'm going to look. But CEW is so impressive. Through high-impact events, industry insights, and professional development, members gain access to the relationships, knowledge, and opportunities shaping the future of beauty.
Discover how CEW can accelerate your career at CEW.org and use code WBMB20 for 20% off of your first year of membership.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. Today we're diving into Sincerely Yours and the capital behind the brand. I'm sitting with Sheila Wong, COO and CMO. We're going to talk about that. And then Arpan Ray, partner at Coefficient Capital. Thank you for being here.
Thanks Thank
for
you.
Having us.
So this is a career journey show. The theme is shelf strategy, but I want to start with the conversation about your dreams when you're little, right? When we start our fantasies about what we're going to be when we grow up. So Sheila, we'll start with you. You're 10 years old. What's your dream?
I wanted to be a teacher. It was the only thing I knew because you just go to school every day and you're like, I love my teachers. And then I realized one day, I was like, oh my God, you have to do this every day, even when you're tired and have like a bad day. And I was like, I'm going to rethink this and do something else.
And Arpan, at that age, what were you thinking about?
I think I wanted to be an astronaut. I was, you know, really into space. I was really into space movies like Star Wars, Armageddon, still my favorite. So the whole like exploration, adventure, I was really into space, I think.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the movie Space Camp?
Space Camp?
Okay, so I'm older than you. It's probably hard to find. Yeah. It's from the 80s. But it's about a bunch of kids who go to space camp in Texas or whatever, and they're like in one of the actual shuttles.
Yeah.
This is when there was a shuttle. And they're like doing a training, but like it actually shoots off into space.
Oh, really?
So I have to add to my list. It's a good, right? It's a really good thing. Maybe they should remake the movie because it was so cool. Well, okay. So, Sheila, I'm sure you teach your team quite a bit, but you're not a teacher today. So let's talk about your career journey into these leadership roles that you're in now. What was that first job where you're like, oh, I'm on the path that makes sense to me?
Oh, that is a really good question. I spent 10 years in management consulting, which is a little bit of a boot camp. And that was such a good experience because, you know, I'm not like telling all the secrets, but a lot of times you get dropped into a project as an expert in something that you've never seen before. And you're like, oh, Lord, we have to implement this in 5 hours. I have never seen the software. Okay. And so you do that enough that you're like, I know how to do this. I'm then put in situations where my team is going to be enough, you know, that I have to teach them and keep them calm and give them the confidence that they can do the same thing. And so it sort of just kind of grows on you, right? Where you're like, oh, we can do anything. Like now we've just done all of the things. There's nothing left. Like we're good. We can tackle it all.
When you're in a role like that, in the early years of that kind of a role, are there people not teaching you what you don't know, but teaching you that you can do anything?
Yes. And it's actually very funny. So in this same example, one of the group leaders who is now our really good friend for 20 plus years, I remember we all were like, how are we going to do this? There was like 30 of us in a room. And we raised our hands like, are we going to see this before we go and implement it? He's like, no. And we're like, well, how do we do it? This is my first time. It was like in pearls and Brooks Brothers shirt. We're like ready to rule the world. And I'm like, I've never seen this thing. And he goes, just like read the prompts on the screen. It's like, what? He's like, go to the help menu. Like, what? And it was so helpful because you're like, oh, he was right, actually, that we could do this and you could figure it out. And, you know, we actually implemented like an RFID system at the largest bulk mail center in the entire, you know, United States for the USPS. So you know, it was very funny. We're like, we could do this. We're, you know, we just figured it out. And like, we fixed all the issues. It was fascinating work.
And Arpan, before we ask, I ask the same question to you, just describe to the listeners, what is the Coefficient's role with the brand?
Yeah, we're investors in the brand Sincerely Yours. So we invested before the company launched and we're backing the team there.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. So then when you, it doesn't appear that you're an astronaut today.
Not yet. Right? I mean, it's never too late.
So same question to you. Like, what was that first job where you're like, this feels like the start of my career?
Yeah, I think my first job out of school was in investment banking. So definitely similar as like boot camp. It was incredibly intense. Like, the hours were insane. Like, everything you hear, like, it's true. Like, I was, my friends still laugh about, like, you know, we have, I step out for dinner, it'd be 11 p.m., everyone's going home. And like, all right, it's time for me to go back in the office. So it was incredibly intense, but I learned so much. And also my first job, it was actually, I was placed into the consumer team, and I had no kind of connection to the consumer industry before that. And I just fell in love with the consumer industry. And that was like 16 years ago, and been in consumer since, and fell in love with it.
So you both have these jobs. Like, I hear these stories all the time. Like, I took my first job in a management consulting company. I took my first job in investment banking. Did you actually know what these jobs were before you said yes to them? We'll start with you, Sheila.
That is a great question. Yeah. So it was very funny because I was sitting there my first day. I'm like, Google? Supply chain search. Right. What is supply chain? Because I was like, what the heck? Like, who do I ask? No, I actually had no idea. I think when they pitch you, they said, you fly a lot, there are free meals and strategy. And that was it. And you're like, yeah, I'm in. Sounds good. And then you're like, oh, this is very, the actual performance of the work is very different from what I've sold. I thought it was just going to be like, you know, having cocktails on a yacht all the time. Not the case. Not remotely close.
And Arpan, same for you. Like, did you like really know what this job was?
I definitely didn't have like some people have like 20-year roadmap of what I want to do in college. I was graduating like the great financial crisis. So for me, it was like spray and pray. I applied everywhere, hoped for a job, like got a few. I was just very thankful to have a job, let alone like investment bank or anything like that. Yeah.
Okay, so this is so fun because these are just such foundational roles of so many leaders in our industry. So Sheila, like, what's one thing you learned at this early job, what you actually use today?
Oh my gosh. You know what? This is the geekiest answer, but I think one of the things about beauty is sometimes people get so interested and absorbed by what color lipstick should we make and what color is the jar. But behind that is, how do you actually get there? How do you make it, you know, and it, what are the considerations that can make something work, not work, successful, not successful? What are the financial implications? How long does it take? And it's sort of the unsexy part. Mm-hmm. But I think falling in love with the unsexy part really helps build the sexy part, right? You kind of need both. And I find that without having this background, you're just in here to be like, I don't know, just make the jar, make it tomorrow, make it, you know, make it for $1. What's the problem?
And Arpan, is there anything that you still use daily that you learned back in that first role?
Yeah, I think it's definitely like a lot of the foundations. But I think earlier in like my career, you look at companies like spreadsheets and slides, right? It's just like numbers on a page. And then I think more as you grow and more experience, I spend more time in factories, spend more time in boardrooms, spend more time in retailers with talking to the consumer, you start to kind of really understand, I'd say, like the nuts and bolts of how companies work and what makes certain businesses great. So yeah, definitely from day one, it was definitely helpful. But more, as more time goes on, you see more experience. I think that's definitely makes every, like I would say, investor more well-rounded, understands things better, yeah.
Let's, Sheila, focus a second on the role you have right now. For our listeners who are not familiar with the brand, can you just give us a quick little three-sentence explanation of what this brand is all about?
Yes, Sincerely Yours is a teen-safe skincare brand founded by Jordan Matter, Sailor Schmatter, and Julia Strauss. And it was really meant to be an elevated skincare brand that is also actually safe for teen skin.
So for anyone who's wasn't paying attention. When you launched, it was Manic Craziness at the American Dream Mall. And my niece was there.
Oh, really? Oh my
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, she was one of the littles in the crowd. And my sister-in-law took her, and she was so excited to be like in the, it was like how many thousands of people showed
80,000.
Up? 80,000 people at the mall at the same time?
Correct. Same as the MetLife Stadium next year.
Yeah. That's crazy. Okay, so she was, I guess she's like seven, probably eight, maybe. So excited to be in the air, like she couldn't see your founder, right? like there were no products left on shelf. I don't even know what they even went to the store, honestly, right? It was like so busy.
It was like a lineup.
But I asked Kathy, my sister-in-law, like, you know, how did Sienna feel about it? And she's like, she was just so excited to be a part of it, right? That's what you've built here, right? Which is a movement, right? Beyond just product. Is that what you expected?
You know, I don't think anyone could really expect this response. I think we're amazingly privileged to have such a great community, but also really privileged to have a co-founder that resonates so well with her community, who's so truly authentic. I know everyone says that, but when you sort of meet her and you engage with her, you're like, oh wow, like you're that girl on screen, and it is exactly the same on screen, off screen. And I've actually heard stories from different people that, you know, seeing her be confident and her authentic self and just love who she is has helped their own teen feel comfortable in their skin. I think that's actually, you know, it's the mission of the brand to help teens feel connected to who they are, the community and everything, and comfortable in their own skin. So, I mean, no, we did not expect this. I think we were hoping to be able to kind of be a guiding light, you know, in some ways, but certainly not that success level, no.
So in your conversations with Salish, like before launch, do you think she could have expected this kind of impact?
There's a video, I don't know if it was YouTube or Instagram, of Salish saying like, I hope 3,000 people show up. And that's genuine. I think, you know, even when we talked to her today, she's like, that was crazy. I had no idea that people were that interested in us. And no, I think it's amazing. It's amazing how down to earth someone with that big of a following mm-hmm. could be. But, you know, that's obviously the appeal. And I think from a skincare perspective, what's amazing is that, you know, what we're trying to do is educate on, you know, teen safe skincare, but also the benefits of a routine. Because later down the line, you're a teen, you have breakouts, like, you know, all these things happen. And it's really hard after the fact to go and correct. So we're hoping that by delivering sort of a buzzy, fun, covetable experience, you're actually getting teens to do something that's good for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Subconsciously. And so they develop this great ritual.
So Arpan, it seems like your team consistently invests in like culture-centered brands. Mm-hmm. How did you find each other? Because like
right.
it seems like if my firm is only focused on culture-centered investments like yours is, like I would want to be on the front lines of this, right?
Right.
So can you give us a little behind the scenes of how they found you or you found them?
Right. I think that, yeah, we're always excited about this market opportunity. But I think what really drew us to Sincerely Yours was the people behind it, mm-hmm. right? And at Coefficient, we invest, to your points, like around like the future of culture and, you know, culture-forward brands. And we think that, you know, you need a community or a content or media-driven angle to have some type of unfair advantage. So obviously the combination of Jordan and Salish, who are, I think, the best creators in the world, with Julia, who is, you know, you meet Julia, you instantly want to be in business with her. She's an incredible person and also, you know, incredibly well-experienced, like, you know, have perfect balance of growth and discipline. I think that combination of people and Sheila all together made this just an opportunity we just had to be a part of. So I think it was more about the people that made us, you know, super excited. And I think there's just an incredible amount of unfair advantages that made us feel like Sincerely Yours is like a really important, like, you know, really good shot at becoming a very important brand.
So yeah. At Base Beauty, we work with many culture-centered brands led by influencers. And without naming names, there's some that we partner with that like really understand like what amount of gas needs to be put in the tank to right. do this right. And then some who really just think like their visibility with their whatever 1 million or 2 million fans is enough and they don't make an effort beyond that. How did you know at the time of investment that these are going to be partners who like mm-hmm. go the full mile?
Right. Yeah, I think it's always a question. It definitely was unknown at that point, but we felt that, you know, Jordan Salish was like incredibly well committed to this. And the second time, I think it's, you know, virality, you know, comes and goes, right? It's really, I think the products need to stand on its own. And that's when you get like repeats and that's when you get consumers, like actual love, right? And we've seen, you know, celebrity driven brands can come and go very quickly. But if your products are safe, efficacious, like have a real reason to exist, we think those are the businesses that are going to like stand the test of time.
So, Sheila, I want to talk about what I told you at the top. I want to talk about, you have two jobs. Those are both hard, big jobs, COO and CMO. Why do you have them both, and how are you doing them both?
You know, I think it's the answer to the question is actually flipped, right? In the sense of, to me, I think a lot of success is driven by thinking about a brand in a 360 way, right? When you start with thinking, what can I create, what should be created it's so helpful to also be the person then creating it. Mm-hmm. So you understand exactly where you can push and pull, and you can deliver something and in a way that financially makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you can keep growing. So, you know, to give you an example, you know, one of the things to think about is product, right? How you get this product from an idea onto a truck, onto a shelf. And I think, you know, if you do either in a vacuum, you certainly can do that and have to make, but if you're the same brain doing both, it makes it significantly easier to say, ah, I don't have time to do that, but I can pull this lever to do this, deliver the same thing here, and just reconfigure a little bit there and actually kind of cross the finish line and check off a few financial boxes, you know. So it's, to me, it actually feels very natural. Instead of being like, oh, why is it both? It's like, no, it kind of has to be 360, right? And you throw in the social piece where when you create the product, it's almost like the delivery and the fulfillment is the middle, and then there's the last piece of how do you then tell people you have it. And so actually having that 360 inside the same, I would say brain, but it's obviously not just one brain, but inside the same sphere really enables you to think forward, you know, when you launch, before you even launch, when you're touching formula, if your brain can say, how will this sound on social? Right, then will it get there? How do we do that? How do we get it to look a certain way? Right, you've actually curated the full experience in a very well-managed way.
What you're describing is actually, I think, also shortening the cycle from start to finish, right? Building optimizations. So we've seen people have to merge roles like head of sales and head of marketing become chief revenue officers. Do you think you're setting a trend here of merging COO and CMO into one world?
I don't think deliberately. but I think, our dynamic just works that way, right? As you mentioned, Julia is amazing. And so I think because we're so agile in the way we work and think, and, you know, I think our hierarchy is relatively flat, we're able to be super agile. And then you layer on top of that, cutting out the separate parties and all the things that need to be aligned, you are naturally much more efficient. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if this is feasible for just any brand out there to say, if you don't do this, you're going to fail. Right. I just think it depends on your team dynamic, right?
Yeah. I think Sheila's very unique in that she's really amazing at the right brain and left brain. She's very unique, and she has an incredible sense of, like, you know, product development, I think, is one of Sheila's superpowers. I think creativity and marketing and storytelling is one of her superpowers. And I don't think there are a ton of people that have, you know, those strengths on both sides of the brain.
Yeah. Would you agree that that's your superpower?
Or is that how you would articulate it? I don't think about it that way. Thank you. No, I think it's, you know, to me, it's actually just about how do you get to the finish line in a way that wins? Mm-hmm. How do you win? What are the elements you need to win? Okay, how do you line up the elements? And what is the fastest and best way to get those elements checked off? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you're less driven by the process and how and, you know, the instructions book. It's like, we just need to get there. So if you're like on this bus and you need to get there, like sometimes your hand's like waving outside because your signal's broken. Sometimes you're like checking the speedometer. Sometimes someone's like thrown up in the back. And it, like, we just got to do all those things because we just need to get there.
Arpan, what would you say is your like work superpower?
Ooh, I think it's... I think, you know, being a good investor is similar in terms of the right brain, left brain, meaning it's, you need a lot of span, I think, right? You have to, obviously there's IQ, which is like, can you see if it's a good business or not? And, you know, the fundamentals good and the numbers good and the unit economics good. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's a partnership business, right? You have to build really meaningful, trust driven relationships with the founders and the teams behind them. And, I think being able to do both, I think it's hard, but I think that's unique and
I define my work superpower as seeing 10 steps ahead. I just feel like I know. Mm-hmm. And what I found is exciting and yet challenging about it is like I'm so definitive, but I have to like bring the people with me, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a client or my team, like because those steps between 1 and 10 are compressed in my head because I know what, like, you know, what the answer is to win. So Sheila, like, with this idea of like, okay, someone's vomiting in the back seat, or you're at a stop sign for too long.
Sorry, it's not a very beautiful comparison. Like,
as a leader, how do you get people on this agility train?
You know, I think it starts with having the right people. Right? I think having a sense of what you're looking for when you're hiring, the types of talent, you know, I think, you know, I tend to be drawn by people who are motivated to achieve. They want to get this done and just true collaborators. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you have people that have that mindset, it's really easy to say, hey, sometimes you're going to see 80%, sometimes you're going to see 50% of the big picture. You got to go with it. You got to trust me that this is going to work, and it's going to reveal itself very rapidly, even if it feels kind of vague at this moment, right? And I think with the right people, I mean, and it's happened brand over brand, and not, you know, not just necessarily yours. What's amazing is with the right people, you're kind of like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. I trust. And you're like, why do you need this last minute over here? And like, why are we trying to get something to Van Nuys Airport in 1 hour to a plane? It's like, because Paris Hilton's going to use it. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Thanks. Thanks for trusting us. Thanks for trusting me and like dropping everything and just getting it over there.
So our theme today is shelf strategy, and what a timely moment to be talking with the two of you because of the massiveness of your launch, bringing the product to shelf. Tell me about the journey of actually picking the right retail partner for you. We can start with you, Sheila.
Oh, boy. I think for us, it's meeting the community where they're at. You know, whatever, you know, you may have read in the news recently. I do think that, you know, we've picked Sephora as our exclusive retail partner, and I think there's a real alignment in understanding what our community wants, the environments they're drawn to, the brands they're drawn to, how to speak to them in a way that, again, meets them where they're at. And so I think that was really, really important to us.
And Arpan, being the backer of the brand, there's so much pressure for businesses to grow. But we're talking about teen skincare. So, like, we know teens don't need many things, right? They need essentials that are safe. So how do you balance this idea of, like, grow, mm-hmm. but Sheila might say, well, no, we're not going to build a 20-step regimen for a teen or a tween.
Yeah, I think
that's true.
I think in consumer and growth, we always say like slow is steady and steady is fast, right? You need to always, whether it's, you know, whether you're selling, you know, mattress spoon cereal or, you know, food delivery or whatever it is, it's like you got to nail it before you scale it. And no brand's built overnight. That's, you know, a generational brand. So I think we're actually, like, as a venture investor, the most conservative venture investors there are, meaning like we're definitely always trying to be like, you have to find the balance between growth and discipline, because if one of the you know, it's an incredible balance, because if one goes, you know, you focus on one, generally it's going to be hard to have a sustainable growth business. So we're definitely in the long game, and I think it's about patience growth.
Yeah. How nice to have a partner.
That's right.
Like that.
Absolutely.
There are many out there that would not say that. I'm sure you hear the stories all the time. So let's talk about this. Arpan brought up a good point. Like, I think it's really easy to get someone to try something once, mm-hmm. right? But how do you actually cultivate an ongoing relationship and, you know, a transaction with that same customer over and over again for replenishment and keep these young people who have, you know, there's a lot coming at them, focused on continuing their daily care with your brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really about the connection we've built with the community, right? And that was our, you know, intention to start with, that when you enter into the brand, you're finding a brand that understands you, hears you, and is built by someone who is you, mm-hmm. right? And who understands what you want. And I think that's what makes us a little bit more, have a deeper relationship than just, this is sparkly, buy this, mm-hmm. and then they forget about you.
Right.
I think there's, you know, there's sort of a deeper relationship there that we're establishing. We are also, and on the other hand, you know, living in a world where social media is shifting quickly. And so in order for a brand to be top of mind, some of the things we have to do is think through content strategy. How are we entertaining? How are we continuing to stay connected through social, reflecting what our community wants, not just buy. Mm-hmm. And I think that these are all just sort of elements that helps us sort of cement that relationship. We are lucky, I think, that for a consumer, you want to use us. And a lot of, you know, the packaging, the products, they're all engineered with like a little burst of joy, whether it's the packaging itself, it's the scent, the formulation, the color, it just delivers a little bit of a pick-me-up, like a thing. And I think that's sort of what motivates even me, right, as, you know, somebody out of the demographic, to really love playing with even our products, right? It's like, and so I think it's great to be able to understand what our community wants and keep delivering. And I think that's how, you know, we get repeat customers.
So as a founder brand, using the founder as a, you know, amazing tool in the toolbox is important, but you have a founder who attracted 80,000 people to one location, right? So actually, and she's a teen, right? So imagine she's doing teen things in addition to being a creator, like education, dance, whatever, right, she's into. So how can you use her when, like, she can't just do like a personal appearance at a Sephora because it would be manic, right?
Like, you'd be surprised. On off days, you can kind of sneak
in. So like if you throw her into the mall on a Monday at like 10 a.m., there's no kids there, they're at school, right? So like, can you actually take her out on the road the way that we would with other founders and meet the customer and talk to the customer in a way that's not like out of, you know, hand?
Yes, but I'm going to qualify that with, you know, funny enough, I think because she's so authentic and down to earth, it doesn't actually feel like going on the road, mm-hmm. so to speak. So for example, I mean, this past weekend, we were out in a public area. We're just walking around. I mean, we're going from one place to another, but we were walking. Mm-hmm. She was walking. And we were dragging away. It was very, it's all very glamorous. And, you know, she got stopped by one or two people, but she was amazing and just, you know, always offers, before people even ask, yes, I could do a video. Mm-hmm. Yes, I could sign this. And it all feels very natural. It feels like, I dare say friends. I don't know if I'm like viewed as a friend, but I think we're all friends. Mm-hmm. But no, it really feels like people who are building something together, mm-hmm. and you're a team. So in that sense, it feels less like you're on the road. It's just kind of like, oh, you're just with your team. That semi-answers your question.
Right. So, like, could you do another sort of launch moment in a mall the size of American Dream again? Or would you have to, like, change it because of the gigantic appeal?
Safety is super important to us. And I think because we were unaware of their draw, you know, I don't think it was ideal to unleash 80,000 children onto a mall.
Wait, can we just talk about, like, how loud was it?
You know, it's an atrium.
Was it like concert level loud, I would imagine, right?
Concerts are built a little bit more to
better acoustics.
Yeah, better acoustics. This is an atrium. So it's stone. It's a little bit less ideal than a concert venue. But I would say, you know, I think we're being super conscious of safety, mm-hmm. of our community, things that we intend to do in the future, and then wink, May 30th, secret event, are super well managed.
Wait, you're having a secret event on May 30th?
That's correct.
That's not a secret now?
I mean, the location is secret.
Okay.
The event is not secret.
Got it. Okay.
And I know that's not secret because Jordan mentioned it on his video. So, but, you know, we are super well managed, you know, about everything, security, names, this one's the secret. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, it's so important to make sure if you're taking the time to come support the brand that we're delivering really the best experience possible, mm-hmm. to every single person who arrives. And how do we do that? Well, we want to make sure that, you know, there's a manageable amount of people that we are able to really touch all of them. And that's a direct mandate from Jordan and Saifish,
right.
They do not, it is not ideal to have a large amount of attendees go home disappointed, right? So we are now tripling, quadrupling efforts to make sure everyone mm-hmm. feels seen and, you know, served and touched in some way.
So it's like you're running a celebrity brand because of her appeal. And my guess is the family doesn't think of her or name her as a celebrity, but it's the same sort of management tactics for, you know, any sort of moment where there's a celebrity who's very well known and like you're talking about safety, security, crowd control. Have you worked in celebrity brands before?
I have. I've kind of been adjacent to celebrities, influencers prior to that. But prior to this, I was CEO of Personal Day, mm-hmm. so founded by Lily Reinhart. Mm-hmm.
The team's going to be here. They're our last show of the day. That's so cool. So it's a completely different playbook, right? So we've worked with very, very notable people, not Salish's age, but you know, similar dynamic with the fan base. Mm-hmm. And what I found so interesting in our work there is like, it's really a different, it's a different game, right? It's not just about creating momentum and keeping that momentum. It's a completely different rule book. Right. I have to say, like, when we started that work, we weren't prepared for it. And like, we had to learn very quickly, like, okay, like different rules, different approach, different way to engage, and manage everything. And now that we've had that experience, I'm like, oh my God, we can do anything. Right. So, with this exposure to this community that's so voracious, like, what's like that one learning that you're like, oh my God, like, this is helping me every single day since we've lived through that launch?
I think it's paying attention to the community. And I think each talent has their own community. And it's really important to pay attention to that particular community, why they're so, you know, engaged with the talent, and making sure that we deliver that, mm-hmm. and that the brand and the talent stays super synced, aligned, and, you know, that we can make sure that if we're saying something and offering something, it feels completely authentic and natural to the talent.
So, Arpan, you probably get LinkedIns all the time, emails all the time, like invest in me. Like, what are the criteria you're looking at, especially like since so many of these brands are culture centered? Like, what criteria are you looking for as an investor so that you can duplicate the right kind of success you have here?
Yeah, I think I think table stakes wise, you know, there's four things, right? It's the market opportunity, it's the founding the team, it's the business model, and it's the it's like some type of unfair advantage, right? And I think where, you know, I think the first three are like table stakes, and you only want to work with founders we, you know well, trust, have a mutual relationship with. Obviously, the business model, unit economics, they all have to make sense. But I think the unfair advantage is really what kind of gets us out of the you know, chairs, right? It's like, is there some hook or some better mousetrap here that gives this brand or this opportunity like some type of edge in an incredibly crowded field, right? And that's where I think we get most excited about.
And are these brands always pre-launch that you're investing in?
So usually it's not. Actually, mm-hmm. Sincerely Yours is... you know, we've probably invested in like 20 brands so far. I think we've only invested in two kind of pre-launch brands. So usually, you know, we actually invest across stages. A company could be at $5 million in revenue. It could be hundreds of millions of revenue. We're trying to find what we think are the biggest and best ideas in consumer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about things that can inspire our listeners beyond the day-to-day. So, Sheila, like, are you reading books, listening to podcasts? Like, where do you get your inspiration and learning from?
Really only from your podcast. Nowhere else. No, I mean, that's really part of it. I think it's a really good question. I am a really big nonfiction fan. And I dare say I only read nonfiction. I'm like a weird kind of person. But I love books that give insight into how things work. So I was recently reading a book called The Secret Life of Groceries. Fascinating book that talks about, I guess it's kind of dorky, but it talks about the food supply chain, mm-hmm. and how food gets to Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, and then the implications of all of those things that are happening before it gets into a freezer or a bag. It's absolutely fascinating because it really makes you think about, gosh, nothing is simple, mm-hmm. right? And it just reframes your mind to think everything has such a double click. I'm so curious now about everything. Right. So I think that's super helpful career wise to always think about the double click.
And was that book like a good fun read, or was it like academic?
I mean, for me, it was fun. I recommend it all the time. I think people are just like, oh, this. No, but it's really good.
So I'm into memoirs. Like, I want to learn about people and how they think, which is why I have the show. And I just finished Lena Dunham's Fame Sick, which is so worth reading. I didn't really, other than the TV show Girls, I didn't know anything about her. But she's an incredible writer, and it's incredible. Like, a read I couldn't put down. And then I was sad when it was over. And then before that, Christina Applegate, remember her? She's an actress. So she wrote a memoir. And it's like both of these women had like really tough, like tough roads, and are just so raw and vulnerable and honest. So, usually I'm reading about like business people, but I just sort of fell into this like entertainment world. Arpan, what about you? Podcasts, books, like what helps keep you inspired?
Yeah, I think all of the above, but I think, I mean, it's a little cheesy, but I would say I probably learn the most from like every day you meet like five or six founders, right? And it's just like, you just learn so much in an hour, right? Like, what are the challenges they're seeing? You know, it's just, it's really, this is real, it's live, it's interesting, it's inspirational, it's human. I would say that's kind of what's I get the most out of, yeah.
In your role, do you like take a meeting with everyone because you just don't know, like, where the gem is, or are you very like focused on who you'll take a meeting with?
You know, it's a little bit of a, like, I think if there's a business with like enough proof points, I think we'll definitely take a meeting. So I think it has to like kind of pass a little bit of a sniff test, to be honest. But we try to meet as many people as possible for sure. Cause yeah.
Well, we're going to switch gears to the final part of our show, which is the game. So, you told my producer, Natasha, you both love restaurants and startups. So we did a mashup of both. Okay.
Boy.
So,
what a combo.
So this is, we're doing lightning round all day today. Were you here for the last game? Did you hear the team?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's, I'm going to give you two scenarios. And at the same time, you need to answer, like, is it this or that? And you either will match or you won't match. And that's fine. It might start to tell us the story over time. So I'm going to give you their theme to restaurants and startups. And you'll just pick which one you're choosing. Okay, so I'll start with an easy one. Matcha or espresso?
Espresso.
Espresso. Okay. Is that too slow?
I would like it a little faster.
Okay, sorry. I know, I really thought about it. I was like, what are you saying?
Okay, so work theme. Do you want to work from a cafe or work from home?
Home.
Home, yeah.
Okay. Why, Arpan?
You know, in cafe, you need like plugs, you need outlets, you need something comfortable. If that all lines up, then I'd prefer a cafe. Yeah.
The tables are dirty.
Yeah.
I've worked from home most of my, like, the entire length of making Base Beauty, which is 19 years. But sometimes I can't focus at home. Like, I'm so distracted. And then being in the noise of a cafe can help me, especially if I'm hungry. Like, it can feed me. Okay. So, AI copilot or human chaos?
it's hard to compare. I think.
I prefer AI, for sure.
Tell me how you're using AI, like, every day, Sheila.
You know what's funny? Okay. I realized that Claude can fill out forms in PDF format. I'm like, this is amazing. So you just like dump a bunch of stuff in there. I'm like, here you go. And I'm just like, do, do, do. And it fills out forms. Like, this is like the best use because in a startup, you're constantly, there's a million forms.
Right.
And so this is, and it's like spot on every, it's actually better than me. It just, it's spot on every time.
Yeah. Yeah. We're using a lot. I mean, we're a small team. We're a team of like 8 people. So honest with AI, I think we can do like twice as much stuff in the day than we used to. So everyone on the team, they have like, you know, one screens, they have like, you know, Claude going and just like automating analysis on automating data, just like whatever we can do, just like create more leverage and be able to like get smarter on deals much faster. So it's exciting. We're like pumped about it. Yeah.
And Sheila, what have you found is not helpful when you like tried AI and you're like, waste of time?
Well, I try to use it for imagery. And you realize that it like gets very confused and it sort of like fights with you, right? Because I'm like, render this event. What would it look like if somebody in a mascot costume was like running down the field? And it gives you this like gigantic, and I was like, no, downsize. And then they make it like microscopic.
Right. Takes
like, actually, yeah, actually, I would just do this myself.
Yeah.
So I personally, obviously, what I cannot do is graphic design, right? So I'm like, well, we'll just go to somebody else.
Okay, next one. Will you, this is like not fair, VC money or bootstrap hustle?
VC money.
Obviously. Actually, bootstrap hustle.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, but they got the nice office.
Well, I guess you're meeting so many people who started with their bootstrapping and they find you,
right? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you feel like when people find you and you find that brand where it's, like you said, the unfair advantage, like, does, like, the lighting change in the room for everybody and, like, the music changes?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you see it, you see it, and it's kind of fun.
That's cool. Okay, so are you in a hoodie like a founder, or are you wearing a vintage leather jacket?
Oh, I'm a leather jacket. Neither,
but I guess hoodie.
I like, I know, it's like kind of old school. I really like this leather. I've had a leather jacket. I wish I
pull off the leather jacket, yeah.
We haven't talked about what time you guys set the alarm for in the morning, but maybe this will tell me the answer. Dinner reservation at 5 p.m. or 10 p.m.?
You both work. Yeah. I have an 8-month-old newborn, so it's either one or the other.
I was going to say, now 5 p.m., because I have a 4-year-old. It used to be 10 p.m., literally exactly 10 p.m. That was it. In my days in one of the makeup companies I used to work at, consistently it was just 9 p.m., 10 p.m. reservations. You could get it anywhere.
Right.
On a weekend. I used to socialize, and I wouldn't start until 10 p.m.
Right.
Yeah. And now I am absolutely in my PJs under the covers. Without a doubt, and many times I am asleep. What time do you set the alarm for in the morning?
I don't, because my child wakes me up and it doesn't matter. So today, 5:30.
And Arpan, for you?
You're like 6:30, yeah.
So you said 8-month-old?
Yeah.
So is that like waking up in the night still happening?
A little bit, but pretty good sleeper. Okay. So that's good. Yeah, lucky so far.
Last one, natural wine or classic cocktail?
Classic cocktail. Classic,
yeah.
Okay. Well, this is super fun. Thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed hearing your stories, and I'm just so excited about watching this brand grow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.